There are three ceremonies connected with the ritual of the sanctuary that deal with the removal of defilement. The first one, which we shall now consider, covers the cleansing from leprosy. Leprosy was the most dreaded of diseases. Its occurrence was well nigh universal. Yet there is considerable uncertainty about its origin. Herodotus believed that it came from Egypt. Thence Israel was infected. In the Bible story, Israel is a symbol of the land of darkness and death, of transgression and oppression, of defiance and denial of God. From it, his people are called out. Leprosy is the quintessence of the evil of Egypt. It suggests the results of sin. This consideration adds peculiar force to the declaration of Jehovah, "If thou wilt do that which is right in his sight, and will give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon thee, which I have brought upon the Egyptians." Of all diseases, leprosy is most like a living death. Leprosy means scaly. The malady appears in two forms, nodular and anesthetic. In nodular leprosy, the nodules are semicircular, firm, and situated in cysts. The skin stretched over them has a shiny surface. First, their color is normal. Later, the nodules become reddish, yellow, or brown. Then they burst and ulcerate. In late stages, the nerves of feeling cease to function. The blood supply, poisoned and sluggish, ceases its flow to the extremities. The limbs and organs, untended by this life-giving stream, dissolve in putrescence. The hair becomes gray and drops out. Leprosy may also be anesthetic in its effect. Paralysis of the nerves of the skin and flesh occurs locally. All feeling is gradually lost. The unfortunate leper may have his fingers, toes, nose, ears, or other parts of his extremities gnawed by rats and remain unaware of the fact. During his sleep, he may roll into a fire glowing in the center of his hut, only to discover later that a limb has been reduced to a charred stump. There is constant suppuration of highly toxic issues. In the end, the bones soften and decay. With his hard palate dissolved, the leper loses his power of articulation. Starvation hastens his end. The appearance of the skin before the malady takes hold is a deathly white. White is often used in Scripture as a token of purity. The whiteness of leprosy, in contrast, covers dead men's bones and all uncleanness. It belies the truth. The decomposition which takes place in leprosy is similar to the dissolution of death. In fact, the rabbis regarded lepers as if they were dead. Ellen White notes, "Of all the diseases known in the East, the leprosy was the most dreaded. Its incurable and contagious character, its horrible effect upon its victims, filled the bravest with fear. Among the Jews, it was regarded as a judgment on account of sin, and hence was called the stroke, the finger of God. Deep-rooted, eradicable, deadly, it was looked upon as a symbol of sin. By the ritual law, the leper was pronounced unclean. Whatever he touched was unclean. The air was polluted by his breath. Like one already dead, he was shut out from the habitations of man. Away from his friends and kindred, the leper must bear the curse of his malady." Ministry of Healing, 67. Rabbinically, leprosy was the ideal emblem of death in the one who still lived. In the Bible, it is also employed as a type of the defiling, corrosive influence of iniquity, and of the man dead in trespasses and sins. Leprosy was three times inflicted by God in punishment of flagrant transgression. On Miriam, on Gehazi, and on Uzziah. Miriam was jealous of Moses' wife. While Israel was in Egypt, and even during the initial stages of the journey to the Promised Land, Moses was without the companionship of his wife. He had left her at her father's home. When Israel reached the land of Midian, Zipporah and her two sons came to live with Moses. Many of the confidences heretofore made to Miriam's sympathetic ear were now given exclusively to his wife. This inflamed the envy of Miriam. Her murmurings against Moses and her traduction of Zipporah roused the divine displeasure. She was smitten with leprosy. The judgment visited upon Miriam should be a rebuke to all who yield to jealousy and murmur against those upon whom God lays the burden of his work. Jealousy is deadly as leprosy. Gehazi might have been Elisha's successor, as Elisha had followed Elijah in office. Often Gehazi had been employed in minor prophetic and ministerial tasks. But under this training, his spirit remained unchanged. In his heart were seeds of covetousness and deceit. At Naaman's cure, Gehazi had been the intermediary. He had brought to the sufferer God-given instructions. It was through obedience to these requirements that the Syrian owed his renewed health. The Lord was trying to open before Gehazi the channel of usefulness he should be and the life of virtue he might attain. But Gehazi sold his integrity for a suit of clothes. For the deception practiced by Gehazi, there could be pleaded no excuse. To the day of his death, he remained a leper, cursed of God and shunned by his fellow men. Prophets and Kings 2:52. Avaricious ambition is as deadly as leprosy. Uzziah was one of the great kings of Israel. The Bible tells us he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord. He sought God. God made him to prosper. God helped him. He was marvelously helped till he was strong. But when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction. For he transgressed against the Lord his God, and went into the temple of the Lord to burn incense upon the altar of incense. As the king well knew, this task should be performed by no one but the appointed priest. But the monarch would brook no rebuke. The sin that resulted so disastrously to Uzziah was one of presumption. While standing there in wrathful rebellion, he was suddenly smitten with a divine judgment. Leprosy appeared in his forehead. Prophets and Kings 3:4. Covetousness of office, which is not ours, and presumption are as deadly as leprosy. King Uzziah of the tribe of Judah is typical of those whose conduct puts them under the curse of sin. Jesus, also of the tribe of Judah, became sin for us and bore the blight of our transgression that we might live. Part of his ministry was to cleanse the lepers. Many transgressions against the laws of life and health are not apparently punished. Some sins, however, produce visible results. Social vice is one. Leprosy was regarded by the Jews as another. It stood for contagion of sin in the life. Its whiteness, sometimes a symbol of purity, was the dread mark of a living corpse. Its lack of sensitivity spoke of a conscience past feeling. The decaying flesh, redolent of death, pointed out the soul's severance from the source of true life. Leprosy's curse underlines the wise man's statement. Because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the hearts of the sons of men are fully set in them to do evil. Leprosy pointed up the need for unswerving obedience to the laws of being. A leper is a loathsome sight. Driven from society, unable to earn a living, he appears clothed in filthy rags. His skin looks dry, and later nodules develop. In times these burst into sores, and gradually his extremities dissolve and disappear. His nose and ears drop off. He looks a living corpse. His voice becomes coarse and lifeless, and is raised in mournful tones, crying, "Unclean! Unclean!" His whole appearance is pitiable as he begs for a morsel of food. Finally, his jaw and soft palate disintegrate and he dies of malnutrition. The law concerning leprosy is also an illustration of the thoroughness with which the regulations were to be enforced. The first point which strikes a student of these legal requirements, found in Leviticus chapters 13 and 14, is the most meticulous care required of the priest in discovering the facts before he pronounces a man afflicted with leprosy. The leper was given the benefit of any doubt. The rubric stated that any condition of doubt in leprosy signs, in the beginning, is regarded as clean before the uncleanness has been established. This is in the Jewish tract Negaim, chapter 5. But after uncleanness has been established, a condition of doubt is regarded as unclean. No hasty judgments are countenanced. Exact rules of procedure were to be followed precisely. No less particular should we be to seek out the presence of sin or the infection of evil in ourselves. We must give diligence to make our calling and election sure. There were many symptoms of leprosy described in Leviticus 13. Should the malady appear but skin deep, the person was not yet regarded as a leper. So a sinner may have fallen only once. There may be no indication that the evil has obtained firm hold of his heart. The character is revealed, Ellen White notes, not by occasional good deeds and occasional misdeeds, but by the tendency of the habitual words and acts. Steps to Christ, page 62. The leper must not be condemned out of hand. The law provided that the leper should be carefully observed for 7 days. He and his relatives prayed earnestly that the Lord would be merciful to him. Should the disease make no further progress, he remained under observance for a further week. If there still were no signs of spreading, the priest pronounced the man clean. However, should a flaring up of the afflicted part occur, the priest was bound by law to declare the unfortunate unclean. Sin, like leprosy, cannot be held at bay. It grows either stronger or weaker each day. Lepers were compelled to live outside the camp. Numbers 5:2. When the nation was established in Palestine, this meant outside the city walls. An illustration of the stringency of this law is the case of the 4 leprous men who were forced to remain outside Samaria even during a siege. 2 Kings 7:3. King Uzziah, notwithstanding his rank and wealth, was obliged to dwell outside Jerusalem. He lived in a separate house. This meant he was regarded as dead and was emancipated from all civil and family responsibilities. Ministry of Healing 67 notes the leper must live alone. In utter loneliness he awaited death. The Levitical law also covered leprosy in houses. You'll find this in Leviticus 14:33-57. And leprosy of garments, Leviticus 13:47-59. The identifying marks of leprosy in houses were greenish as well as reddish streaks. The reddish patches on the wall were in all likelihood caused by the presence of a fungus under the common name of dry rot. Most people are acquainted with the effects of this fungus, but its form and appearance are familiar to only a few. Hugh Macmillan, the Scottish naturalist and preacher, continues with this description of the disease. At first it makes its presence known by a few delicate white threads which radiate from a common center and resemble a spider's web. Gradually these threads become thicker and closer. We may have noticed this in a basement that is damp and dark. These threads coalesce more and more until at last they form a dense cottony cushion of yellowish white color and roundish shape. The size of this vegetable cushion varies from an inch to 8 inches in diameter, according as it has room to develop itself and is supplied with the appropriate pabulum. Hundreds of such sponge-like cushions may be seen in places infected by the disease, oozing out through interstices in the floor or wall. At a later stage of growth, the fungus develops over its whole surface a number of fine orange or reddish-brown veins, forming irregular folds, most frequently so arranged as to have the appearance of pores, and distilling, when perfect, drops of water, whence its specific name of lacrimans, or weeping. When fully matured, it produces an immense number of rusty seeds, so minute as to be invisible to the naked eye, which are diffused throughout the atmosphere and are ever ready to alight and germinate in suitable circumstances. If once established, dry rot spreads with amazing rapidity, destroying the best houses in a very short time. The law regarding it in Leviticus is founded upon this property. 7 days only were allowed for its development, so that its true nature might be placed beyond doubt. Then the priest shall go out of the house to the door of the house and shut the door 7 days. And the priest shall come again the seventh day and shall look. And behold, if the plague be spread in the walls of the house, he must observe it for a further week. The precautions here adopted are in entire accordance with the nature and habits of fungi. By emptying the house of its furniture, shutting the doors and windows, excluding air and light, the very conditions were provided in which dry rot would luxuriate and come to maturity. If the walls were completely impregnated with its seeds or spawn, this short period of trial would amply suffice to show the fact, and the building might then safely be condemned to undergo a process of purification. The effect which dry rot produces upon timber is to render it useless by destroying its elasticity and toughness, so that it cannot resist any pressure and gradually crumbles away into brown dust. So virulent is its nature that it extends from the woodwork of a house even to the walls, and by insinuating itself between the bricks or stones, vegetates through the whole structure and reduces it to a damp and mouldering state. There are no means of restoring rotten timber to a sound condition, and the dry rot can only be eradicated by removing the decay in affected parts, clearing away all the spawn, destroying the germs with which the plaster and the other materials of the wall may have been impregnated. For this purpose, the processes of burning them has been recommended. That is, washing the walls and woodwork with a strong solution of corrosive sublimate or chloride of zinc. If the dry rot is not fairly established in a house, it may be removed with tolerable ease by these processes. Should the disease, however, have become widespread and deep-seated, no means of dealing with the evil can be depended upon, except that of removing altogether the corrupted and contagious matter, and admitting a free circulation of air. This was exactly what the Jewish priest was commanded to do. Then the priest shall command, and they shall take away the stones in which the plague is, and they shall cast them into an unclean place without the city, and he shall cause the house to be scraped within round about, and they shall pour out the dust they scrape off without the city into an unclean place, and they shall take other stones and put them in the place of those stones, and he shall take other mortar and shall plaster the house. It often happens that even this severe operation proved ineffectual, and after repeated repairs of the same nature, it is found that the building is so hopelessly ruined that it must be abandoned and dismantled. Leviticus tells us, if the plague come again, break out in the house, after that he had taken away the stones, and after he had scraped the house, and after it is plastered, then the priest shall come and look, and behold, if the plague be spread in the house, it is a fretting leprosy in the house. It is unclean. And he shall break down the house, and the stones of it, and the timber thereof, and all the mortar of the house, and he shall carry them forth out of the city into a clean place. Ministry of Nature, pages 51 to 54. Further, Macmillan notes, the Bible speaks of leprosy as sent expressly by God himself. When he come into the land of Canaan, which I give you for a possession, and I put the plague of leprosy in a house of the land of your possession, the Bible declares. It was so sent in mercy, and not in judgment, to show to them by a palpable proof, appealing to the eye, what could not be so well revealed by other evidence. It was the visible manifestation of a hidden, insidious, unwholesomeness, the breaking out, as it were, of an internal and universal disease. It directed attention to the unhealthy character of a house and stimulated inquiry as to how it could be remedied. Whereas if such abnormal appearance presented itself, the inhabitants might remain unconscious in the midst of conditions that would slowly but surely undermine their health and in the end prove fatal. In the Levitical narrative, we read that in the walls of the affected house there were greenish as well as reddish streaks. These greenish streaks were caused by a much humbler kind of fungus. Everyone is familiar with the common green mold, or Penicillium glaucum, of botanists. This fungus is extremely abundant everywhere and seems to have been no less generous in ancient times. It too must be treated in a similar manner. Besides leprosy found in the person of a human being and in the houses in which he lived, the Bible points out that leprosy might also break out in the garments men wear. Hugh Macmillan discusses this in the following paragraph. The leprosy of garments may have been caused by the same fungi. Precisely the same appearances manifested themselves in one case as in the other. I am disposed to attribute the greenish streaks on the garments to the common green mold, for as I have observed, it grows as readily on clothes as on house walls, when left in a damp, ill-ventilated, ill-lighted place. The reddish patches, however, seem to me to be produced by another type of fungus, very common on some cheeses. This last mentioned plant is occasionally found on damp walls in shady places and on various articles of dress and food, sometimes extending itself over considerable areas. It is usually a gelatinous mass, the color of congealed blood. Hence it received the Middle English name of gory dew. Though formerly ranked with algae or seaweed, it is now ascertained to be part of mold. So, under whatever names we may class them, the plants which occasion the strange appearances on houses and garments belong to the same tribe. Instances of reddish patches suddenly investing linen and woolen clothes are by no means confined to the Levitical narrative. The leprosy of garments speaks to us too, like all the impurities of earth, of the defilement of sin. Our own righteousness as filthy rags, our own garment of good deeds and feelings, is moldy and ingrained with the greenish and reddish streaks of uncleanness. The mildewed garment of the flesh clings to us, poisons all the springs of our lives. The righteousness of Christ alone is the pure linen, clean and white, without speck of decay or stain of sin. He invites us to buy of him white raiment, that we may be clothed, and that the shame of our nakedness may not appear. To wash our robes and make them white in the blood of the Lamb is his directive. Ministry of Nature, 70 through 75. In the case of leprous houses, the cleansing ceremony was similar to that for a person. Houses, in the law of lepers, represent symbolically the individual soul, our bodies, or the church as a whole. All these are dwellings of the Holy Spirit. Houses in Zion do not contract leprosy, the libraries inform us. Those within the church of God are less likely to be defiled. But if a house gave evidence of conditions that rendered it unsafe for habitation, it was destroyed. Ministry of Healing, 278. In leprosy of garments, however, there was no cleansing ceremony prescribed. Garments picture our attempted deeds of righteousness, our fig leaf, homemade coverings of our sinfulness and disobedience. The only cure for defiled characters is death and removal. The garments, filthy rags, must be burned. The priest alone was authorized by God to judge in all cases of leprosy. This was lest Israel be defiled. Likewise, our Lord, the giver of Old Testament laws, entrusted his church leaders with the responsibility to pronounce upon the encroachments of sin. John 20:23. The priest's word was final. So it is with the church. Matthew 16:19. The priest's ruling must be according to divine regulations. It is only upon this basis that the gospel minister can open and shut and bind and loose.